Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. Welcome back, everybody. It is the IT Babble podcast. It is a very cold day here in November in Indianapolis. Tony, how is the temperature in Houston?
I'm not sure, Patrick. I'm in a bunker because of cybersecurity, and I'm afraid to go outside because of cybersecurity.
That seems a little irrational, but I'm sure we're going to get into it. We're going to obviously be talking about security. I mean, you have a whole lot of things here.
I won't actually go through them all. There were just some like notes, because we don't have enough time, and I'll just start rambling.
And then I have a long discussion connecting your computer or device to a wireless display, whether that be an interactive whiteboard, a projector, a television, whatever, because that's what teachers want. That's what people want. And we're reevaluating what we use. And I just want to kind of share what I found out so far. So, but first, let's start with cybersecurity and why you are never going to see the light of day again, Tony. Why are you just going to stay in the bunker?
Well, Patrick, apparently all schools are under attack, and you know, we can't really do anything anymore because we're under a massive onslaught of hackers. They're just trying to hack us to steal the list of kids who are going to lunch for free or something. I'm not sure what they're trying to steal. But this week alone, just in a week, I have had to look over and listen to multiple proposals related to how we've got to like pay a company to do X, Y, and Z.
Oh, yeah.
And other schools are posting the same stuff. Like, we've got to bring somebody in to identify. And I'm like, okay, we either need to take a step back or close the building.
I've got something to add to that. Last year I went to a Hewlett Packard event we got to see Captain Marvel for free. So we went to the Hewlett Packard event to see Captain Marvel for free. Anyway, of course there was a 30 minute spiel before the movie started with HP, and they told us, Tony, and I might get the quote a little wrong here, but that Asia was hacking your printers. The country of Asia. He said the country of Asia. He did. And he said it three times. And my colleagues and I just kind of looked at each other and kind of chuckled a little bit because they were hacking the printer, because some people have like some sort of like pin code system, and they would get the pin code from the pin code system, and then they were able to log into the printer, and from there they were able to trace it back to what the Wi-Fi address is, which is inputted into the printer, and then from there they could get access to your network, and then they could steal all those lists that you're talking about, Tony, that if that gets stolen, the school has to close. That's what you're talking about. So
yeah, that's right. So anyway, I'm actually going to work on a couple things, and what I want to talk about today is what I'm planning to do. So first off, I actually have a list of standards that I've been using for a long time that I developed with a very smart person who is a certified Cisco wireless implementation trainer.
Wow.
And I've actually asked him if he will come on our podcast to answer some questions. Ooh. I'm waiting for him to get back to us. He is so level and calm that I am hoping his information will override some of this insanity that I have been seeing. Secondly, I'm going to write some blog posts because I think people need to be aware that companies want to make money. And if they can scare you into doing evaluations, which basically don't require them to come up with solutions, they just get to come in and tell you what's wrong.
Yeah.
They're going to do that. That is easy money. You go to a school and say, you spend like 5 hours there. Look, if you went to a school, any school, because it's education, and sat in the lunchroom and you just watch people use their phones, you probably could come up with 100 things that are not really best practice that everybody's doing.
Yeah.
And then you can charge for that. But you know what? All of that stuff is on dozens of checklists around the world that you can get for free to make sure it's not happening. And I have a checklist like that. I have a list of things you can do to make sure your network's secure. So I've kind of put that out to a few schools already. And it was just coincidental. I was just updating it. I'm going to make that part of some blog posts, and I'm going to try to get some schools into a webinar as another thing to talk them through, like, what all the stuff means.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But, here's what's bothering me. I don't want any money out of my operating budget to go out to vendors to tell me that, kids using mobile devices at school might be dangerous. and that's, it's just kind of ridiculous. And I've been hacked. I have worked at schools where when I came in, the network was already compromised. I've had to go through it in China. I've had to go through it in a boarding school. I've had to go through it in situations where it's not illegal for the kids to do it. So take a step back and think about that. We're working at a school where if the kids want to hack the school, it's not illegal and you're not allowed to kick them out for it.
That's awesome.
So
it's a good rule.
And they were good at it. They were clever. So I'm just saying that it's a reaction, and I don't know where it's coming from. I don't know if it's new regulations, but
I think
if you really, really feel like you're at risk, then you should be able to sit down and look at every bad thing that's happened to your network in the last 5 years and write down those instances. Like, oh, we had this outage or this happened or this happened. I bet most people don't really have any examples or case studies.
Yep.
Because schools usually get pranked. They do. They can be pranked. But they are rarely targeted. I know that there were some schools last year, the last couple of years, that were targeted with ransomware.
Yeah.
And ransomware hit a few years ago. It hit when I was in China. And it was a big deal. If you were running outdated Windows networks. But do you need to spend a fortune to have someone come in and tell you that you shouldn't be on Windows 7? That's my point. Yeah, it's not that there's no threats. It's just that dealing with the issues, they're fairly common sense solutions, and creating a panic within your school community is a problem. And if you ask for like $30,000 for a security company to come in, everyone's going to find out about that and everyone's going to worry. And it's just not worth it.
No.
So anyway, this is just an announcement. I'm going to start working on this, blogging about it. I'm going to try to get this guy in on it so we can do an interview with him and get people kind of going in a calm direction. And there's just no reason to be in the bunker. And I can tell you, if you make your school feel like a bunker, your students and teachers are going to circumvent your security process.
Yeah.
And when they do it physically, when they physically start to do things against protocol,
that's
you're gonna have a problem.
That's a bigger, yeah. And Audrey Waters from Hack Education even talked about this, and she kind of lumped that into
Patrick, are you there? Are we breaking up?
Oh, am I breaking up? Can you not hear me? I can hear me. I'm coming in fine, but of course I've got headphones on and I'm sitting right here. Can you hear me?
Uh-oh. Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, am I back now?
You're back.
Okay, good.
So anyway, I'm done with my rant.
All right. I was just going to say that Audrey Waters from Hack Education, she goes, you know, when you pretty much make your school like a semi-fortress, that has an effect on the students and on the parents and the family and the community that is part of your school. And sometimes, you know, whether it's good or bad, I don't know. But there it is. And yeah, I can't wait to see your blog post, and we'll talk more about it. This is going to be awesome. Because I have thoughts. I've got thoughts.
Uh-oh.
I have many of them. But we don't have a bunker here. If we did, it would be a tornado shelter. That's what it would be.
If you had a bunker, would you have wireless displays, or would they all be hardwired in?
Oh, on a bunker? Oh, definitely hardwired in. There's too much concrete, water, pipes. Yeah, you have to. Yeah. You have to. But in my school, though, Tony... In my school, all our teachers want are wireless connectivity. They don't want to have to plug their computer into a spot or into a panel, because that kind of anchors them to that spot. I understand what they're talking about. They want wireless connectivity, And currently, Tony, can you guess what we have in our school? Because we do have something.
Apple TV.
We do. We have an Apple TV because it is the cheapest wireless solution you have if you have Apple's Apple laptops or desktops in your computer. The problem with Apple TV is there are many problems. One, it is not made for a networked environment like an enterprise environment or a school environment. I cannot centrally control all of the Apple TVs. I can't do it. Now, you can put them in FileWave. FileWave now supports them. I didn't know if you know this, Tony, but they support them. But the problem is for that, you got to pay. You're paying somebody. So you don't have to get up out of your desk and walk to a room and unplug it and plug it back in. Because that's all it really can do. I don't know what else.
Right. Yeah. I saw that with Meraki. They also added Apple TVs, but you're right. You have to pay a fee for each one.
Yeah. It's absolutely silly. And so we are in the early stages of seriously looking at an alternative for Apple TV. The problem is Apple TV is the cheapest of all the solutions, unless you do Miracast. But Miracast only works with Windows. It's owned by Microsoft. It was bought by Microsoft, owned by Microsoft, only works with Microsoft products. So we're looking at things like Barco, which I know we've talked about before, and you have experience with Barco.
What about Chromecast? How does that work?
It'll work great with our Chromebooks. It'll work good as long as you're in Google Chrome. But as soon as you leave Google Chrome, it does not work if you're on Windows or Apple.
Okay.
And Chromecast is good. It's good. But again, I've talked to other schools, and what they've said is we get the same thing as Apple TV, that it'll just randomly drop the connection. But there's no explanation why. There's nothing we can do to troubleshoot. There's no configuration. It's just so. That's yeah. We're looking at AirTame, which is a new fare. It's about $400 per device, which seems pricey, but they just partnered with a company called AirServer. Tony, do you remember AirServer? We use them in Dubai.
Yeah, I was using AirServer actually just last year in Korea.
So AirTame now natively supports AirPlay and Google Cast, but with AirServer, it'll work with anything. It'll just work with anything. You don't even need to download like the AirTame client on your computer. You can just kind of connect if you know how. And so that makes it a bit more, and you can centrally manage them. That's another thing. It has its own dashboard. You can centrally manage it. But on the more expensive side, you have the Crestron Air Media 2, you have the Barco ClickShare, and the Mersive Solstice systems.
Dude, the Mersive is amazing.
Okay. All right. We have a demo unit coming next week, and we're going to be able to play with it, and I'm going to write a review about it. Or just at least my thoughts. So I've heard good things from Mersive, but Tony, what is the problem with Mersive? What is the one problem that schools are anywhere, when they look at Mersive, and they're like, we want to put this in every classroom? What is the one thing that they are going to, that's going to be cause them to hesitate?
The cost.
Yeah, the cost, because per room you're looking at over $1,000 per room.
That's right.
And that's not even
but
including...
it does work.
Go ahead.
I would like to throw out, like, it does work with like multiple users at once. So with Mersive, at least the demos I've seen, you know, the students and the teacher, they can all be on the screen kind of at the same time. They can be sharing content. So I really think, you know, I was kind of thinking about this too, and my thoughts are to look at rooms a little bit differently. So normal classrooms versus library versus big rooms. And I'm thinking, like, maybe you do something low cost like AirTame. AirTame, I don't think AirTame's that bad, and I'll get into that in a second.
Okay.
You do something low cost, AirTame, Apple TV in the classroom. But then you develop some bigger spaces, innovation spaces, libraries, maker spaces that people can book out that have a bit more power. So you put Mersive in something like that. Now hundreds of students can use it throughout the week, so the cost is offset. I mean, you're basically creating these big collaborative environments, and you could say, okay, like all of like grade six is going to go to these three spaces today and work on this big project collaboratively, now you have some justification for providing a bigger solution. It's just not something I would put in every classroom.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Now, I was reading, if you read the Apple TV deployment guide that like Cisco puts out, I read it earlier this year because they were having some issues when I first got to the new school here in Texas. Cisco is like recommending that you put the Apple TVs in their own like VLAN and you put them on the wired network. So you actually plug them in. And, you know, if you do that, now you need more ports on your switches.
That's
and
right.
In a lot of cases, schools have to buy more switches to support Apple TVs. So is it cheaper? I mean, the Apple TV might be cheaper, but
yeah.
The actual implementation to get it up to like an enterprise level is quite expensive. You've got to buy the license with FileWave or somebody. And then you also need to possibly expand the hardware in your network, which is hardware plus usually an additional license for the hardware. So I'm not really sure if you look at something like Airtame, which can just work without any of that, I don't know if the cost of ownership of Airtame is actually that much more expensive.
That's a very good point. And we have a few Airtames in our building, but they're Airtame, they're generation one. And so they have some issues, most notably staying connected to just they're very small. They draw very little power. They don't have the best Wi-Fi antenna in there, so but they work pretty well. They don't work bad. Yeah, but you're right about hardwiring them, and we have hardwired some of our Apple TVs, and they still get dropped. People still lose connection to them. Despite the fact that they're hardwired, they're not on their own VLAN, but
also like Barco. So the Barco, a lot of people are not familiar with them. I think I have a post about Barcos. The normal like cheapest ClickShare unit. I have a post on. Barcos look a little strange, but they are used at the corporate and the military level because they're very dependable. Now, one interesting thing about the Barco is you can use it with two displays, because if you have any computer using the Barco, Windows or Mac, the Barco has a little transmitter button. Now, some of the new versions don't, but I still think this would work. You connect to the Barco unit, and that's wireless. But at the same time, you can connect to another HDMI source with your laptop. So you could connect to a screen and a projector at the same time and get a really nice experience. And if you do have a room where you want multiple displays, the Barco actually makes that easy, because the Barco button is basically a transmitter, and it's creating our little private network, and it's taking that load off of your computer. And it works great to do two displays at once. So if somebody's looking at doing dual displays, Barco is actually quite affordable, because you don't have to modify anything in the room. You don't have to install splitters in the ceiling. You don't have to do anything. You just need one HDMI connection cabled, and then the second connection is wireless.
Wow, that's pretty cool. And one another thing about the Barco versus Apple TV, and maybe with Airtame, but the Barco, it's almost 100% that it's going to work. Like the reliability of it is so high.
And it doesn't need internet. So the Barco creates its own network. You can be literally in a bunker and use a Barco.
Yes, you could.
you can update the firmware manually. Like, you can use them completely offline. And that's nice. And the transmission distance for the cheapest Barco, the cheapest one, the transmission distance is something like, I don't know, like 30, 40 feet.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's a classroom.
Think about that.
That's a classroom right there. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a pretty big space.
That is. So, my school, we're going to be looking at all of these options out there. In fact, I talked with a vendor the other day, and their Altuma, I think it is another one that we might, it's kind of the same thing. I don't know. It says Altuma Real Estate. I have to find the email here. Hold on. It's kind of a very similar solution, but it is They're a smaller company. They're a smaller company, and so they're not as expensive. If I can find it here. Oh well, I might have to. Oh, hold on here. Barco. Oh, here it is. I think I found it. Yeah, Altona. ATLO. Atlona. I don't know. But apparently they're a little bit cheaper, but they're a pretty, he says they're very good. So we're going to try all these out. We're going to try a whole bunch of them out. I'm going to try to write some reviews on them and see what I think and go. And yeah, we're going to see what we can do. I mean, we might end up doing nothing. We might end up doing nothing and just sticking with what we currently have, which are Apple TVs and giant receivers like Sony or Onkyo receivers in every classroom to handle the switching. But yeah, we'll see. It's going to be interesting. This kind of stuff is kind of fun. I like doing this research, trying this stuff out.
Yeah, and I'm kind of curious to where the consumer smart TV market is going. I mean, Samsung, LG, Sony, they all have new, fairly affordable screens that come with built-in AirPlay.
Yes, and a lot of them have Chromecast built in as well.
Right. So, I mean, I'm seeing that as like something interesting to look at, and I'm kind of wondering how that changes the model. I mean, if they do have AirPlay built in and everything else, then isn't it, if you are running with Apples, then it's kind of smarter to just start looking at outfitting a classroom with three or four nice big TVs that you can you can display on, the students can display on, and you don't have to have that additional hardware. But we really don't know how it plays like on the network. We don't know if it, if they have to be managed.
How can they be managed? Another problem here in our class, and this is probably true with a lot of schools, is that in our classrooms, we have one wall that's just windows, so there's lots of natural light. We have another wall that's kind of pretty much for storage. And then that leaves us with two walls that can have a whiteboard or something for teachers to draw on. And the teachers had been very vocal. They do not want to give up their physical whiteboard that they just have a whiteboard marker and draw on for an electronic version. And so that leaves us with one wall. And when you put a TV on that wall, I don't know. I'm not. I like the idea of a projector. A projector is really easy for us to move. If we have teachers who are like, you know what, I want to rearrange my classroom and I want the projector on that side. Well, that's easy for us to move, and take the. We don't really have to do much as far as moving the mount. Right. It's just kind of like we just rotate the projector in a lot of cases. But I don't know.
Have you thought about getting rid of all the furniture and just putting a big rug on the ground and put some pillows down and give everyone just VR goggles and then everyone just lays on their back and uses those weird like VR gloves to do all their work?
Yeah, that's we've got the Stephen King Lawnmower Man education curriculum package. So we're just going to do that 24/7.
We should see if we can buy the rights to that movie and just start distributing it for free. Well, everybody needs to watch that.
Yeah, it's you got to keep in mind it's time that the special effects were pretty. We're like, wow,
VR the story is ahead of its time for sure.
All right, but that's all I've got for right now. So, I don't know. Do you have anything else, Tony?
Well, the only thing I'd like to add is if you are thinking about bringing in a company, I was thinking about this today. If you are thinking about bringing in a company to do cybersecurity, it would be a good idea for you to make sure that you vetted that company, because once they come in and do an assessment and do penetration testing on your campus, they pretty much know how to break into everything on your campus. And I was looking over some terms of use and some licensing this week, and Google Suite for Education and Microsoft Office 365 for Education, they're both equally compliant with all U.S. rules related to like FERPA and COPPA and all this data stuff that people have to do. So I think it would be interesting if you, you know, if you're looking at these companies to come into the school, you know, if they don't have any level of FERPA compliance or they don't know what that is, you should not let them in. That's just something I was thinking about. Like, if they actually don't understand the data privacy and information privacy rules specifically designed for K-12 education in whatever country you're in, then they really shouldn't be on your campus. I was just like getting even more paranoid. I'm like, oh man, we're going to invite people to come in, and now what do we know about them? Yeah. How long have they been working at the company? Who's their cousin? You know, do they have like some angry ex-girlfriend at their house who has access to their laptop? I mean, you know, that's why I'm in a bunker, because it's just not safe.
All right. Well, Tony, I've got to run. We've got an event I got to set up for, and I got to get going here. So for IT Babble, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And keep on babbling out there, and we'll catch you on the next episode of IT Babble. And make sure to keep your bunker clean. Nobody likes a dirty bunker.